a weapon. Right. So this is the common causation, as you can see, I've extended about it. The main reason why I've been studying it is to understand the work of Balthaus and Kapelsen 30 years ago on general identity products. But of course, there's also hope to be used for new things. And so far, all that's happened is a new work, a little bit new work, on boundary links. I'll talk about this at the end, of course. There's already a Kant and Beal. Whoops, I don't like that. Not okay to connect. No. not that I can update my Adobe installation. Okay, so I will talk about applications of this algebra to topology, but there won't be terrifically new applications. I'm hoping in the next few years there will be really much more thorough and more kind of novel applications, so I shouldn't be too modest. And the reason, there's a lot of algebra here, which is new and fairly complicated, and I hope to, just hope to spend a time in the world of topology. So, let me start. So here is this little kind of blurb about colocalization. You start with a ring A and a set sigma. Now, traditionally in localization, one has elements or matrices, that's novel part, and even worse, morphisms. But the key idea is that out of this input, you get a new ring. So there's lots of localizations of categories. But here, I definitely want to get new rings, of course, for manifolds and in the solution. So the big idea is simply that this colocalization is a very powerful non-commutative ring construction.
So why
sigma is closed? No, not. I mean, it can be done. You know, it's saturated, as it's called, but I don't. But at this, on the very first kind of advertisement, everything is possible. Of course, I know technically one should, strictly speaking, saturate. Okay, so the. Sorry, not. Here we go. So the kind of imperial standard application, new application of colocalization, is that if you take certain triangular matrix rings invented for us by algebraists, who study use triangular matrix rings a lot, one gets a new construction of general identity free products. There are two types of general identity products. The terminology goes back to Balthaus, either an amalgamated free product of the standard kind or an H&N extension. And it's quite interesting that this non-point localization does not require that it be an injective. Either, I mean, in general, kind of standard results assume kind of half and half conditions, that H is a subgroup of the G1 and G2. But one can actually apply the construction to non-injective situations. And once you can write the group G, or rather the group ring ZG, or even better, the matrix ring of a matrix ring of ZG, as a colocalization, this gives a new way of relating modules, chain complexes, and quadratic forms over this big ring to the components, to the little bits and pieces used to construct G. The kind of application to boundary links will have just the G, the free group, on new generators. So at this point, I'll say next slide, please, but I'll tell this to myself. So this is the standard pre-Kron localization. So Kron localization was about 1970 and about 1930. Orell worked in the United States, I think at Yale, possibly, or Harvard. He had a funny Norwegian name, Einstein, like Einstein, that is an O-Y and a nice kind of crossed O. And last time I gave a talk about this, there was a Norwegian in the audience, which was fantastic. He could say it right. Instant error. Anyway, so the standard Orell localization, which was mentioned already by Kent and others, you just take a relatively closed subset of elements, and they satisfy the Orell condition. So it's another name for it is the classical ring of fractions. So what you do with that is you take, assuming this conditions, generalization of the idea that you should be inverting only central elements, then one has an element of the ring of fractions is a fraction. It's an equivalence class of pairs like this, and the whole point of this condition here is that this is an equivalence relation. And it's a pretty standard result that just as an ordinary commutative localization, say going from Z to Q, this Orell localization is a set A module. So homology commutes with localization, and all the tall groups are zero. So that's very standard and very familiar, and unfortunately all this fails for conlocalization. So here's the input of a conlocalization. So so I don't require sigma to be closed under anything. I do want it to be only a set of morphisms of finitely generated projective A modules. The original chronolocalization actually had matrices, so P and Q were science engineered free. But for these applications, the generalistic products, I very much want this generalization, which is actually due to Bergman. These algebraists were very interested 20, 30 years ago in embedding non-commutative rings in analogs of skew fields, basically. So they're inventing funny rings, but they're very kind of close to fields. And they really weren't studying group rings. That's kind of a novelty. All right. So a ring morphism from A to B is sigma inverting. Is each of the induced morphisms over B is a B modulus morphism. And the chronolocalization has the universal property that it's universal sigma inverting. And so I'll just use this method also. For any sigma inverting morphism, as on this slide, there should be a unique factorization like that. So it's kind of a Bobacki type thing. And the original definition of Kern was rather complicated. He used generators and relations. So he made the ring very, very big, basically by adjoining the, well, he was the only way to make it. So he formally inverted the matrices and adjoined to the ring all the entries and formal indices of the matrices, and then there were relations. So that was the convergence theorem. The problem with this great generality is that you have no guarantee that you're not getting zero. For example, sigma could be just the set that the zero morphism would be allowed, but then, of course, you would just get the zero morphisms. That not just exists and is unique would have been better. Now, even in the case when it's non-zero, there's trouble, and the trouble is to do with the fact that localization now in this non-commutative world isn't flat. So the homology of a localization is not the localization of the homology. This is a pain. And it's one of the main reasons why it's very hard to directly apply all one familiar methods. However, the method of fractions did get fairly early on a kind of non-commutative analog due to Peter Malcolmson, who was a student of Bergman. And he wrote down a normal form. So the big idea here is that instead of having a fraction, one just goes very much like the zigzags one sees in, say, in the work of Verdier on category of fractions. But the only three zigs, or maybe two zigs in one zag, is the case maybe. The point being that you don't need a huge sequence of them. You can always amalgamate them by making P and Q larger. So these triples are the analogs, basically, of SS inverse G. Okay, so I will certainly not tell you now how to write down the equivalence relation, but it made it relatively easy to decide, for example, when is this morphism an injection? I mean, if this is zero, obviously this is not going to be an injection. But one of the things I would like to do, also for topological purposes, is to know when this localization actually captures A itself, let alone anything more.
Is every element
of that one? Yes. Yeah. No, highly non-unique. I mean, it's like that.
Your rings might not have identity.
They should have. I should have said my rings are associated with one. I mean, I don't think people have invented.
Sigma inverted, they might not have an identity.
Oh yes, it does. The image of the identity here is the identity. No. If you start off with a ring with identity, you still have a ring with identity. That much is the only good thing about it. Okay, so there's some notion of stable flatness, which Amnon Neumann and I invented, not quite realizing it had been invented under different names by other people, Warren Dix, 20, 30 years ago, and somebody, a German commutative algebraist. He must have been non-commutative algebraist, I think of him as commutative. Sorry, I've forgotten his name. In our paper, there's a kind of literature. But we invented this after Vodias, and we invented our own name, stable flatness. So localization, sigma inverse A, is said to be stably set if these tall groups are zero. So these tall groups are also the homological condition. They are exactly equivalent not to the homology commuting with sigma inverse, that would be flatness, but only the direct limit over all the chain complexes which have the same chain homology stuff. So it's a slightly peculiar condition, but it's stable. I'll explain why one needs this. But in particular, it's not satisfied. So Aidan Scope is a great expert on these things, and he told us, and we kind of worked on this together, how to construct examples of kernel localizations which are not stably set. And in particular, have you defined what I mean by this? But it's kind of fairly obvious. A sigma inverse A module chain complex can be lifted if it's induced from an A module chain complex. That'll be explained on the next slide. So in particular, in general, you cannot clear fractions because it's not a ring of fractions. But this is this condition of stable setness, not always satisfied, is a non-commutative analog of clearing fractions. So there's some point to it. Okay. So here's a theorem. I'm the meaning myself. If this localization map is injective and stably set, then there's a kind of addition to exact categories. So this is like the analog of the idea that if you go from finitely generated free abelian groups, that's A where Z and this where Q, you go finitely generated free abelian groups, finite dimensional vector spaces, finite groups. So this torsion category of homological dimension one torsion modules are the things on which linking forms live, and for knots and links, branching forms. So having an exact sequence of categories is a good thing for three reasons. One is that every chain complex over sigma in the say at least finite finitely generated free is of the form that I should say list. So C over sigma inverse A means C is chain equivalent to sigma inverse B, B over A. Also, of course, a great relevance to of applications to topology, there are non-exact sequences, localization sequences, both in high algebraic K groups and the quadratic L groups. Well, this generalizes earlier work of Aidan Scofield himself, and also Pierre Fogel and myself, in fact. There have been a lot in the commutative world, there's been a long tradition of these localization sequences, but these non-commutative ones are much harder to get by, to come by, rather not to get by. Okay, now, so here I'm going to talk about three types of localizations. One is the traditional one, so this is also with group rings, and certainly does not exhaust all the ways in which you can construct or use localization, just the ones I'm talking about, I'll talk about today. So the first one is the traditional one. Even for the group G need not be abelian, you can certainly have a sort of commutative localization. For example, you could invert all the coefficients and go from ZG to QG, inverting all the non-zero integer coefficients. So the motivation for studying this type of localization is that this localization is a better ring than ZG. So start with a complicated ring, ZG, and get a nice or better ring. For example, if G is finite, this rational group ring is semi-simple, so that's a good thing. But the two examples of interest to boundary linking forms, have slightly different features. So this one is, I'll explain the application topology later. You just take the integral group ring of the free group, and you take the set of square matrices, so as in the original Kern localization, of all the matrices over here, which when you augment, there's an obvious augmentation map. Take every group element, set it to one, become invertible. So it's a fairly standard thing to do, and was one of the first applications of Kern localization in topology. But here is a slightly more sophisticated application, the one which got me excited, which is that the construction of a generalized free product, that's an amalgamated free product in H and extension, is a special type of Kern localization, and it's not quite direct. I don't want to construct a simpler ring. I want to construct the group ring itself, or at least a matrix ring. Since I'm only interested in modules over the group ring rather than the group itself, it's perfectly okay just to construct the matrix ring, and then I can apply Morita theory whenever I want to relate ZG modules to MKZG modules. So, for some integer k, it doesn't matter which, so in fact this will be 2 or 3, this group ring, this matrix algebra, or the group ring, is going to be a co-localization of a triangular matrix ring. I'll give examples in a moment. And this localization map, so A would be a kind of ring which sort of, I mean, so here's the original ring. Sometimes I make it nicer by going forward, I make it nicer by going backwards. So expressing this matrix algebra as a localization, I have a simplification of it. This ring A typically will be a nicer ring. This will only involve the bits and pieces used to kind of disassemble the group. So that's conversely, the localization map is an assembly map, which pieces together the local information in the components of the generality product to the generality product itself. So in the injective case, this kind of Harkin type case, it's actually possible to describe the homological algebra of ZG modules and algebraic K-inversity of ZG in terms of A and Phi. So the injective case corresponds basically to the stably flat case. So as we all know that amalgamating products are much easier for injective maps. So this would be the case, the injective case, when G is the free group. And in that case, actually, the case where U plus 1. I'll give an example. Okay, so here's a little, very rapid course about triangular matrix rings, which is a nice kind of branch of pure algebra. And in fact, algebraic study triangular matrix rings partly to give lots of examples of bad behaved non-commutative rings. Peter Lenner, I'm sure, can tell us more about this, he asked. So here's a basic definition. You have two rings, A1 and A2, and A2, A1, by module B, and you simply write down this ring. An element of the ring is a triple, an element here, an element here, an element here, and you multiply in the obvious way. It's a ring. One thing that's kind of going to be quite bad later on is to put an involution on this ring. The standard way of putting involutions on rings, matrix rings, well, you have to do some conjugation. You can't put B here, so I'll mention later what to do about that. Anyway, let's stick with this general, just with the ring. So the thing about this ring is that it has two projective modules, namely the first column and the second column, and they add up to A. So these are very nice projective, finely joined projective modules. And now comes the standard proposition in two parts, which name first is that the category of A modules is exactly equivalent. Let's just go back so you can see what A looks like. Is exactly equivalent to triples, M1, M2, and clutching map. Right? So since A has got this very nice construction, modules over A have an equally nice construction. And this is going to be my application, the analog of a fundamental domain. There's some local information. And it's very easy to see what local. M1 is an A1 module, M2 is an A2 module, and U, using this bimodule structure, is an A2 module morphism. And what's good about this is that if now you take any ring morphism from A to another ring, C, such that there is a C module isomorphism, so G1 and C2 become isomorphic, then C is a matrix ring over the endomorphism. So that's kind of very low-level algebra. However, what I like about this is that this expression for the tensor product, so here, missing, I didn't have space, unfortunately, to write the word Morita. This equivalence between C modules and D modules is Morita theory, that is quite explicitly. This is a very simple expression. Now, I've spent a lot of time since I started working surgery theory, working with core kernels. I mean, the Bassel-Swan formula, for example, the White and Booth of the type of Z, the Shanasson-Novikov business for L theory, any number of times when you have to deal with a core kernel when dealing with algebra. And I suddenly realized a couple of years ago, it's always a tensor product. That made me very happy, because co-kernels are nasty things and tensor products are nice things. In fact, they are the same. It's quite useful. Okay, so here's the example which constructs a generalized key product from a triangular matrix ring. Here it is, the 3x3 one, and very easy. You write this as P1, that's P1, that's P2, that's P3, and then the second column is a submodule, sub-object obviously of the first one. Third one is a sub-object of the first one, and I learned from Aidan. He actually had a slightly different example, that's why it's my R here. But nevertheless, it was basically Aidan's. That if you do this and you invert these two inclusions, then you get the matrix ring of the amalgamated free product. And what is more, it's very easy to prove that it's safely SLAT, but not SLAT, in fact, for injectives into the maps. And I won't bother you with the HNN extension case. If you want to know more about this transgenic stuff, I recommend my own survey article on non-fluid localization and topology. So it's not should be true. So I explained the both connection, of course, with the Basser theory of groups acting on trees, which characterize the genetic products and also exactly this Waldhausen-Kappel stuff. So I mustn't forget that we are here, content on knots and links. So of course, the co-dimension two placement problem is the title of the paper by Kappel and Shanson, which started many good things, applying surgery theory to the co-dimension two placement problem. And it depends, well, in my first instance, just given definition, the homology of X is coefficients in the Z paran of X module, that's kind of obvious. But here is a kind of little, I mean, I should mention a name that this kind of surgery approach, the homology surgery approach, Kappel and Shanson, actually grew out of a rather nice paper of Santiago Lopez de Medrano. So he didn't know, do that much surgery, but he did, he knew about rather little. But I mean, the whole machinery, of course, was Kappel and Shanson. Okay, so here's what happens. That if you take a codimension to embedding, now on the topic of the conference, and you take the complement, then by Alexander duality, apart from the extreme dimensions, the homology of the complement is just the cohomology of the big thing relative to the little thing. So the homology of the complement depends only on the homotopy type of homotopy class of inclusion. So it doesn't detect nothing in particular. This was a sphere and this was a sphere. Dimension to it. There's only one homotopy class. However, if you go to the homology of the universal cover, then of course the homology of the universal cover does depend on the knotting, so it's not a profound, but for me very useful thing. So the rest of the talk will be on the joint project of Dez and myself on the application for this conlocalization to boundary links. Such that I'll not repeat everything that Dez said, but I will obviously rely a little bit on this. Nevertheless, I would like to kind of remind at least myself the definition of a boundary link. I can't see it often enough. It travels sometimes remembering. So the only difference from between my definition and Dez's is that, or anybody else's, is that I use Y instead of X naught for the trivial link component. Everything else is the same. So I mean, I will stay here. So the crucial point is that the boundary link, this business of having a disjoint dastic surface, corresponds to the equivalent to this integral homology equivalent, inducing a surjection. I suppose I should talk about meridians being center generated, but I won't. So this map F here, which was before, yeah, there it is. This map F determines the Zeifert surface by making it transverse circular and taking new points, one in each circle. And taking the transverse in each. So this is a geometric construction. And one of the kind of guiding motivations for me, at least, of all this, is to immediately, well, not immediately, but after several years, this geometric construction of transversality should be replaced by an algebraic construction using this conlocalization. So my original title was indeed correct, algebraic transversality. I won't have much time to talk about it, but this can construct, should be can algebraically construct a Zeifert surface. Okay, so let's go back to the augmentation localization. So this is the one which I mentioned already, and I'll invert again, well, not again, but precisely the set of square matrices in ZF mu, which augment to invert the matrices. And not only was this studied already 10 years ago, with more, but a nice result of Michael Faber and Pierre Fogel, that this particular localization stayed flat. And they didn't, the stayed flatness condition they had, they didn't realize quite how useful it would be later on, but they knew enough about to prove it, so that's something. So going back to before even the stable flatness, the point about this localization is that a chain complex, this would be a C here, a finite finitely generated ZF mu chain complex C is acyclic when localized, if and only if it's acyclic when augmented down. And this is applied here. Because if you now look at the localization map, and in this, it's in satisfaction to call it detects nothing. But the point here is that if you take the homology with these coefficients, you get this non-trivial homology of the boundary link component. Here you just get zero. So the difference between these things detects nothing. It's not that localization detects nothing. And then y again is the trivial link component. That's very standard. But it's also very standard now that already in 1980, Katharine and Chanderson, following on from the codimension 2 placement paper, identified the concordant group of new component n plus 2 dimensional boundary links. So that explains very nicely what is meant by this new structure. I won't do it now. It's a relative gamma group. The only problem with that was that at the time when they were writing it, there wasn't a fantastically good algebraic treatment. And the gamma groups they defined were algebraic, but not the relative ones. They always had very complicated ways of passing from an actual boundary link to an element of this group, because they had a very complicated geometric description of this group. So the absolute gamma groups, such as this thing here, were algebraic, and these were algebraic. This was kind of morally, at that time, geometric. So one of the things I wanted to do was a completely algebraic treatment of the sequence. So I'll explain it in a moment. They also showed, as Des explained, that the even dimensional ones are zero. This is all high dimensional. I'll only be talking about high dimensional ones today, ever, most likely. Okay, so here is again, I'm afraid I'm repeating a little bit what Des said. This is a historical table, and the key names are Zeisberg from the 1930s, Blanchard from the 1950s. In fact, next year will be the 50th anniversary of his death. Mm. So, Levine, of course, Jerry is here. So, all of these things, not this one, but these two things start with Jerry in the case mu equals 1, with the expression of the odd dimensional boundary link composing group in terms of Zeisberg matrices. Then it's later, the same thing Blanchard forms, where Jerry stood in for Jerry. I mustn't talk too quickly, it's very confusing, Cherry and Jerry. Anyway, the actual computation, which was done by Jerry in the Knott case, was done in Edinburgh a couple of years ago by Des. And then, in fact, I didn't have space on the slide. Yesterday, he explained how to do also the same computation that using Blanchard forms. So that's all very well. So about a year ago, I suppose, I identified the Cappell-Chanderson exact sequence with the L theory exact sequence. To be honest, one could say that Duval had done it also. I don't think it's a great result. Some great novelist out. What I do want to claim is that what I was trying to do was to work with chain complexes. Duval was assuming always that someone, Cappell-Chanderson, say, or Wall, had done surgery on the boundary below the middle dimension. So his invariants always assumed a certain preliminary geometric surgery. Here, I avoid that by using chain complexes. So this means that if you take an actual boundary link, you don't have to do anything to it. You go straight to the mapping cone of this Z homology equivalent. Same map as before from X to Y. Y here is the universal cover of the trivial link complement. And this localization sequence identifies these gamma groups with the L groups of this torsion category. So this is slightly perverse without explaining the involutions. I won't do it, but at this stage it's just the standard X1 resolution, involution. Only to say that it all works with chain complexes. I mean, you're quite right. This should have a key or this shouldn't have a key. No, he was doing search. He had to do lots of algebraic search below the dimension. But it's fine, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, absolutely. I mean, in fact, a V is more justified than an R here. I'm perfectly okay. I don't. Not. The point is, I have this very general way of constructing the non-commutative L theory localization sequence, which also works in symmetric L groups, which is some relevance here. But the point is that in the symmetric theory, you can't do the surgery below the dimension. So that's the hidden kind of aspect of this is the symmetric part. So it's particularly relevant in low dimensions where you can't always, you don't always have this nice surgery model. So now there's something which I call the Cayley localization. So this was in a kind of hidden way underlying a little bit of what Des was talking about towards the end of his talk. And it's to do with constructing the group ring of a free group as a non-localization. So let me just draw a picture of why Cayley. Well, it's the Cayley graph of the free group. So I only draw pictures for the case F2. That's supposed to be. So the picture is as follows. That's a fundamental domain. There's one, Z, one, Z, two, Z, one, Z. For example, that would be a perfectly good fundamental domain. So that would be the case mu equals one, but you already get a 2x2 thing. No, that's mu equals two, in fact. So for mu equals two, A is so note it already looks different from the way in which I constructed the amalgamated free product. Top right to the bottom left has to be like that. So an A module V consists of R modules V naught, V1, V mu, dot dot V mu, and R module morphisms from V I to V zero. So I'll put V one here, Z1 V1 here. F2, V2 here, and then R2, V. So if you actually have a physical fundamental domain, so to speak, that is, you have a construct the universal cover, say, of figure 8, then you always get exactly that much information as is given by a module over this ring. So it's not entirely divorced from topology. And this, I'll write as Q0, that's Q1, that's Q2. And then there is going to be certain morphisms. So there are going to be two projections from Q1 to Q0. So this is, there's Q. Okay, so there are two projections from here to here. We either take the first factor or the second factor. Similarly, from Q2 to Q0, there are two projections that go sigma 1. So it's called the sigma 1, 1, sigma 1, 2, sigma 2, 1, sigma 2, 2. And the point of all this is that if one applies a Corfitz method to this context, you get exactly a matrix ring of the free group ring, or the group ring with R coefficients, R doesn't matter what it is. Of the F mu. So all I have to do is identify the endomorphism over the localization. What is that? It's A. Now, I made it, there's a misprint on this one. This should be a Q. I should warn you about that. So the point is this endomorphism is freely generated by exactly the two automorphisms you get by inverting something here. They have nothing to do with each other, that's why you get a free group. And the motivation for all this is that if you have a manifold, such as a boundary link X here, with a map to a wedge of new circles, if mu equals 2, and let's assume it's, as in the boundary link case, it's geometrically transverse, but in real life, I want it to be algebraically transverse. And then you just cut X along, well, these two neighborhoods, or the two kind of co-dimension one things, you can get a picture for the universal cover. So just everywhere you use X. And the same picture in algebra and topology. This is a this thing here is a fundamental domain. For whatever it was, for X tilde. Well, now the case is figure 8. Case is not such a big sound. So the construction of the induced F mu cover, that one, from these bits are, and the calligraph, by gluing together all these. Well, I don't have space to extend this infinitely in two directions. Now, translating this construction to algebra, you started off with, anybody can start off here, if you've got this, you've got the chain complex over ZS mu, or it's actually RS mu, doesn't make any difference. And suddenly, this geometric of the algebraic construction of choosing a fundamental domain gives exactly a listing of the chain complex, perhaps using Morita theory to think of it as a matrix, chain complex of the matrix ring, you don't get an A-module chain complex. So you can see now what I mean by assembly. The disassembly, the construction of X using these XIs has its algebraic counterpart in a chain complex dx tilde over A with these sort of dx tilde. That's a precise definition of a chain complex over A with localization sort of thing. This is a kind of, this shows how geometric transversality. Shouldn't have done that either. So this thing showed how geometric transversality determines algebraic transversality. Okay, so now we come towards the end. I have exactly 5 minutes. So let me define a Zeifert module. Dez and I both define the Zeifert module in the same way, fortunately. Now I call it the VE and he calls it VS. Let's call it VS. So it's a finitely generated projective R module V together with an endomorphism S from V to self together with a direct sample decomposition. So these objects actually appeared already a good 10 years ago in Microfarvest classifications of simple boundary links. And of course, link modules, the things which Dez called link modules, maybe. I call them branch field modules, in the sense like remembering the Zeifert to do with Zeifert surfaces and branch field things are to do with the link complement. So it's a homological dimension 1 RSU module such that the subtle isomorphism, this condition, which Dez already talked about, is satisfied. And then the same functor as in Dez's work, the covering functor. In fact, here you can still see I forgot to change 1e, it should be an S. B of VS is a co-kernel construction. And now you see the standard, which people have seen many times, this is a tensor product. I really do like to think of the tensor product. It helps me kind of fit things in to a bigger picture. And here, the Z here is the sum of these idempotents multiplied by ZI. ZI comes from, this ith generator of F mu, and pi I is the idempotent using the given direct sum decomposition. Time for my very last slide. It's a big picture. So it's fate of drawn by hand. So here is for any ring with involution, we have now defined a commutative braid of exact categories with chain duality and functors. So A here is this Cayley localization. So going from here to here is a Cayley localization. Here, from here to here, is augmentation localization, and they fit together. And the way they fit together is that there's a very kind of direct description, here's all B, of these three torsion categories. So here it is. This torsion category are these link modules. They're exactly the RS new modules which become contractible or acyclic under this localization. So I've got some link modules here. This are Zeifert modules, so VS I should have had here. And here are the Zeifert modules which have covering zero. And what's suggested by this is that one should, the comparison between Zeifert modules and branch field modules should be based on an exact sequence. Now it is true that the word exact is here. Unfortunately, Dez and I cannot quite prove as much as is promised by this diagram. We'd love to be able to say that this is an exact sequence or fabrication sequence of exact categories, as in this Neumann and Mein theorem. Unfortunately, it's not quite possible yet. Now, we can prove So it's easy enough to check that this is a stable stable flat localization, always. That's not the problem. The problem is this one. I mean, the reason why Faber and Fogel could only prove that the augmentation localization stable flat for I equals Z is actually very hard to prove more generally. So I'm afraid the best that we can do at the moment is to say that this braid induces a commutative braid of exact sequences in algebraic K and L theory only for I equals Z. But I think it's a conjecture. If I had small space on the slab, that's a conjecture. It's true for any ring R. Okay, it's exactly time for me to stop. Oh no, it's R is cubed, okay. Oh yes, the idea that...
What I understand is just the mechanics is, usually you have some sort of formation condition. You want the density to be dual bonds.
Absolutely.
When applying it to math theory.
In fact, yes, absolutely right. So the word which I skipped, change you out. So I have a comprehensive theory for change you out. So these are categories in which, like the reality one, the dual of an object will change complex. And these, you have to do that. Because this is a diameter ring, you cannot have a standard involution. You don't have an involution. What you do have is a notion of the dual of a of A itself, say, that it changes.
Might it not be easier to then work in the category, work with chain complexes, of course, right? And sort of put this in the Balthasar setup and try to use this vibration theorem? So
yes, only as an input. But even Balthasar theorem is an input. And the table sentence is an input. I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, just because it was acting doesn't mean that you get to play the thing. Somebody has to do the work.
That is the machinery of the period.
I mean, the problem is you have to make sure that the... I mean, it is really not that much. The problem is to make sure that this satisfies the acting. So I have to be aware that this is not how the machine is to be used. But I'm not entirely sure yet.
Any other questions? Just quickly, I'll make sure I understood what you were saying before. Fogel inserted a chain complex returning to an honest form, the boundary form.
You see, there's my technique. But see, that's actually, I mean, you just use my
right, but you have, would you then to create, I mean, you're looking at corners and classes of quadratic.
And all the symmetric.
And that holds in general as long as the group, as long as the ring injection is post-revision.
And this state is
and this state is pressure.
Injection is not material.
Thank you.